Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Depth Chart Podcast. My name is Freddie Maggard. It is a cold and rainy, I think it's Tuesday. Is today Tuesday? Yeah. In Versailles, Kentucky, I'm joined by an excellent panel. And I don't think a very happy panel. Nick Roush in Louisville, Jay Dorch in Louisville, and Andy Murray is in his car. He lives in Northern Kentucky. I have no idea where he's at now. Nick, you and I got to talk about the Vanderbilt game in length last night on the KSR Football Podcast. So I thought we would start off today and let you, Nick, ask Andy and Jay some questions.
That's a great idea.
For folks that don't know, Andy and Jay were team captains at Kentucky, many year starters, excellent players and just leaders on the team. And Bleed Blue, right? I mean, they support and they are as big blue nation as you can get. And really, I thought we could get a pulse of what folks were thinking. And Nick, fire away. Let's get these guys going and see what they thought about the program and about Saturday's game against Vanderbilt.
Well, first and foremost, Andy, I hope you've got more pieces of gum to chew through. Because it looks like your jaw is ready to just rip and tear through something.
I forgot I had it in there. I was so excited to be in my car and out of the office.
How does losing a football game to Vanderbilt make you feel inside? Warm and fuzzy?
You know, hey, let's face it. We've all been there. We've all pulled the trigger on a bad ball game against Vanderbilt. I'm just disappointed in – I guess that it happened to this team with this much talent and so much to play for. I don't know. Yeah, it's a rotten taste, and I'm afraid we've taken some big steps backwards.
Well, and the thing is too is it wasn't just a like Andy points out, you still had something to play for. It wasn't the season you wanted, but you were ranked in the top 25. And you lost to Vanderbilt.
Andy, yeah, go through the position. When you say we've taken a step backwards, are you talking about offense, defense, obviously special teams, or mainly on the offense? And if so, what does that look like for you, being a fullback? What does that look like?
I guess a step backwards meaning, you know, I always felt like if you could bank on anything, you could bank on Stoops' teams being tough and playing hard. And from what I heard, I was not at the ball game. It was a miserable weather day. I had a really good friend and former player that's totally disgusted, said at any given time, Kentucky had 25 or 30 kids on the seat warming benches wrapped up in jackets. Vanderbilt's guys had no jackets, no seat warming benches, and were on the edge of their field fighting tooth and nail to get their first win in 3 years. Now, you know, football is a tough game, man. Weather plays into it. I get that, but I think we've become complacent. And, you know, everybody gets complacent at times. I've been complacent in my own business, and I've looked in the mirror and said, you know, I've turned things around when I feel like I'm getting behind or whatever, but complacency is evil, and I think we've become complacent. And when this team expects to throw their hats out and win, it's not good. We don't have that kind of talent. I mean, you know, you're talking about a team coming in here this weekend that I laughed the other night in the Tennessee broadcast. They said, wow, this defense is playing great for losing five first rounders. Okay, Kentucky hasn't had five first rounders. I can't name five first rounders. So when you get complacent in this league, you're going to get thumped, and I don't care if it's Vanderbilt or whoever.
Jay, defensively, I thought Saturday was Kentucky's worst outing of the year. Yes, Tennessee scored more points, but they started five drives inside of Kentucky territory. Yeah, you can look and say, yeah, the penalties and whatever in critical situations. But Vanderbilt drove 70 yards at times and to score and scored on a two-minute situation. And, you know, touchdown there with, what, less than a minute to go. I didn't see also much fire and competitiveness from the defense, which is odd. And it's very uncharacteristic of a Brad White unit. And I thought Kentucky got whipped on that side of the line of scrimmage too. What did you see on Saturday?
I was there. I sat through the whole thing. And to Andy's point, so my tickets are on the – I think I'm 33 rows up on the visitor side. So I'm right behind the Vanderbilt bench. And from the jump, those dudes were jumping around, chanting, yelling, screaming. They were bringing it to us. And this team, for some reason, has been that way all year, Kentucky has. They really – I've not looked on the sideline and see when music's playing, them jumping around, towels going, and just getting fired up and just pulling for their guys that are out there and just bringing the juice we always talk about. And so this team has just kind of been that way, and I don't know why. Saturday, you know, it's tough to be without Square and Jones out there. They're the leaders of the defense. But that's no excuse. I mean, Trevin has played a lot of snaps. Derek Jackson's played a lot of snaps. They're no longer, you know, rookies. And I can't put a finger on whether it's just lack of leadership on the field, but, you know, we became super undisciplined on the defensive line. Obviously, for the last several years, we've been spoiled to have one guy that demands being double-teamed, whether it's Pascal or Bohanna or Bully or whoever. We don't have that anymore. But they got undisciplined in their rush lanes. They allowed Wright to get out. It's almost as if we didn't even prepare for Wright to be the quarterback, which I know that's not the case. I know they knew that he was the one that was starting, but – I can't tell if it's communication. I can't tell if it's just literally just undisciplined play. But, man, they were not the defense that we saw down in Florida or at Ole Miss, you know, or Mississippi State. You know, those are the three games that come to mind that I feel like, man, you look at that defense on those three games, it was impressive what they did. I mean, to hold Anthony Richardson to 4 yards, I think, or something like that. But it was sad. I mean, watching them in the huddle, watching them even after they made a big play, nobody was jumping around, high-fiving, you know, trying to pick each other up. It was almost as if there was 11 guys out there, and they were playing for themselves, and that was it. It was just sad to see.
Nick, Adam said something similar to what Jay mentioned last night on the KSR Football podcast, that the defense almost looked unprepared. Going deeper on that and what you saw, trust me, we'll get to the offense a lot, but what did you see from that defense other than giving up big plays in critical moments? And like Jay said, getting out of rush lanes and not playing discipline or with that fire and drive that we're normally see with a Brad White defensive unit.
I think a lot of it came down to when you start the game with a big play, second snap, you're forcing a fumble. I think guys got in the, all right, maybe I'm pad some stats kind of mode. And then I think you also got one of those games where you have to play discipline against his RPO kind of stuff. And it's easy to get away from that when it's Vanderbilt, when the setting is what it was. So, like, I think a lot of that is just mental letdowns. And also having, you know, I know DJack and Trevin have played a lot of snaps, but that this kind of stress that they put on linebackers, they haven't had that before, right? With all the fancy, shiny lures, like, it's easy to bite on some of those fakes. So, some of it is that style was going to put stress on inexperienced guys. But I think a lot of it was just, you know, mental letdowns, mental mistakes. That you can do to the setting. And even though it wasn't great, they still were good enough to win. I mean, you should be able to score more than 24 points in a football game. And that's where I mean, they forced two turnovers, right? Like they gave the offense short fields to operate with, and the offense didn't take advantage. And that's where I think most of this is going to come back to. No, did the defense play well? They did not. But they forced turnovers. They gave the offense easy opportunities to score. And you give them the ball on the 30-yard line, two plays into the game, and they get 0 yards. Score touchdown.
I think it goes back to the lack of complimentary football. You know, yeah. You have a turnover. You expect the offense to, you know, punch one in here. Let's get this, like Jay said, let's get excited here.
Get it going.
Excuse me, and get going and get a touchdown and go out and gain 0 yards in three plays. That is deflating for the defense. And Jay, I'd ask you, as bad as this offense has been, and it's we dove into the numbers last night, and it's pretty bad. It's borderline worst in the Stoops era. Does that frustrate a defense? I mean, I'm not saying there is a divide in the locker room or anything like that, but does that form a you know, man, these guys are bad and they're not helping us at all. Does that come into play on Saturday and how Kentucky gave up 24 points to Vanderbilt, which, like Nick said, I totally agree. You should be able to win the football game if you just give up 24 points and a couple turnovers. We're grading Brad White's defense on a curve here because it's been so good. But with the offense being so bad, does that come into play a little bit, Jay?
You know, we never saw that when we were playing, whether it was defense playing well or not, or offense playing well or not. I think without good leadership, it certainly can play a factor, and I can't tell if it did or it didn't. But I do look at the defense Saturday and almost see a defense that was playing not to make a mistake, that just don't give up the big play, you know, but don't go make a play. And that's not typical of Brad White's players. Brad White's players, typically, they're going to make the play, and they're disciplined, and they're where they're supposed to be and all that stuff. But it's hard to say because I wasn't on that side. I never saw if there was any conflict on the bench with UK between those two units. I would be super disappointed if it was. Now, I'm sure that there's times that, you know, Andy was frustrated with us as a defense if we gave up, you know, a big play after they had a long, long drive and then they're back on the field again or what have you. And, you know, but – it just, with good leadership, that should never be the case.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, it didn't bother me because the only thing I had to do was take a snap and hand the football off. So I wasn't tired. I didn't care. But, yeah. Andy, this
bottom line is you got to play this game with your hair on fire. And if you're not playing football with your hair on fire, good things are not going to happen. You cannot just go out and go through the motion. You can, in this sport, I don't know if there's any sport you can go through the motions. I mean, these kids are not playing with any sense of urgency, and they're not playing with their hair on fire. And we had guys that played with their hair on fire, and they made plays. And that, it's the only way you're going to win in that league is to come and exceed. You know, you hear the term empty your tank. I mean, if you're sitting at dinner after a football game and you're not cramping, you didn't empty your tank. These kids aren't emptying their tank, and they're not playing with their hair on fire. And why hasn't Stoops been able to get through to him? He says it himself. I don't know. Is it this new generation of players? Is it the whole recruiting process? I don't know what it is. Why you can't get excited for 12 Saturdays out of the year when all you do is lift weights all year long for 12 Saturdays? That's your chance to shine and your chance to play and your chance to prove yourself. And we have laid how many eggs now? Multiple. And it's Saturday in the South, man. What else do you want? Where would you rather be? And that this team, it's irritating. It's so frustrating to watch.
Yeah, I feel like there's something in the locker room. There's something between the coaching staff and the players, and maybe we find out after the season or what have you that makes, oh, okay, that makes sense. I don't see it on the sideline. I don't see players bickering on the field or on the sideline. You know, but Saturday I could tell. I mean, Vandy was getting under our skin on defense. I mean, Carrington Valentine was out of sorts, you know, and they were letting that jawing was going on. And, but there's something that's amiss with this team, with this program this year that I have no idea what the distraction is. But it's not a typical Stoops team. I mean, the penalties, the shooting yourself in the foot constantly, and just the lack of energy. I mean, literally just the lack of energy coming out of the locker room, guys playing with reckless abandon, knowing that, man, I'm going to make some mistakes, but I'm also going to make some plays too. And I just feel like, you know, Saturday for sure, it was like they just didn't want to make any mistakes. They were playing a, please, let's just don't make any mistakes. You know, we should win this game. And that's just, boy, you can't do that.
Nick, what's your take on that?
Oh, you got it, Andy.
Go ahead, Andy.
You can watch Stoops, and I've said this for the last few weeks, and I've got my thoughts on some of that stuff, but he's not engaged. I mean, you can see it in his face sometimes. He is not engaged. And I don't know if it's one of those things where, man, I made a huge mistake with this OC, and he's swallowing that pill and he can't hardly get it down, and he can't say. I mean, well, I don't know what it is, but he is not as engaged as he had. I mean, he was almost obnoxious in the past to the point where you're like, somebody settle him down, and he got criticized for making bad decisions because he gets so wound up. He doesn't get wound up that much. I mean, I haven't seen him on a sideline. You know, he would just blow his top. And there's something going on. He's not engaged. And it's obvious to me where he's not, you know, blowing his top like he would. And everybody be like, man, that guy needs to settle down and coach. I mean, he's just – it's weird. It's obvious to me.
He did do it one time. It was the field goal where they had 12 men on the field and Josiah Hayes against Missouri. He was blowing his top off that time. I'll tell you that. But there is a general sense of just disorganization among the team. Like, you know, just the operation, right? Like, you're not getting calls out of the huddle quickly enough to where Will can do stuff at the line of scrimmage. I thought that tightens up at times, and then it kind of goes backwards, and then you're running up to the line to get things done. The two-point plays, right? Like, you should know your two-point play, like the back of your hand. Oh, and they get a penalty to put you on the one. Chris, you're the one who should be getting the ball, not Jatom McClain. Like, there are some organizational things that have just been off, and I think that's reflected in the lack of discipline out there, whether it be the penalties, the special teams mistakes, all that from the top down. It just felt a little off.
One of the greatest men we all know, Coach C, what do you always say? Preparation leads to opportunity. There is no such thing as luck. We're not prepared for these football games, and that's disgusting to me. And stuff like that is ridiculous. We did that stuff every single day at the end of practice, and we put money on the line. You know, the players were in the kicker's ears. We were in the offense's ears, trying to run through our two-minute offense, run field goal, run punt. They come out and they're not prepared. There's something going on. The preparation is missing. And you make too much money for that, in my opinion.
Yeah, we had on the extra point or a field goal, can't remember which, but, I mean, he's out there counting. We're one short. I mean, that should never happen.
So, Nick – Jatom McClain ran the two-point conversion attempt.
Yeah.
It happened so fast I didn't catch that.
Yeah, they ran. It was like an I formation just inside zone, and they had McClain in instead of Chris. And it was after his long run, but they had already trotted somebody out there, and there was a penalty, and they didn't sub in Chris to do the handoff. And Rich got pressed on it after the game, and he dodged it until he was like, it got a second question. He was like, yeah, I really don't know why Chris wasn't in there. So, yeah,
I guess.
Guys, it was cold. It was a bad weather day. It was cold. Yeah. We had to worry about stuff like that.
I didn't realize that. Yeah. Let's take a broad brush of this offense right now, averaging 339 yards a game. That's last in the conference. Just about in the bottom end of the conference on every statistical category other than third down conversions, and I think Kentucky's ninth in the SEC at around 40%. So offensively, you had some flashes last week against Missouri, I thought, with some explosive plays, and I thought Will did good there. And But, you know, you have an NFL quarterback that throws for 109 yards against a defense, a pass defense giving up 325 yards, last in the, one of the worst pass defenses in the league. And you get sacked four times and more tackles for loss. You get stuffed on two-point conversions. And you go at red zone inefficiency. You get, what, three drives inside the 30 and come out with 6 points in the first half. Just this offense has screamed inconsistency and ineffectiveness, really.
It took until the fifth drive to finally punch one, or the fifth appearance inside the 30 before they punched one in.
Nick, if you could pinpoint
in the press box, oh no, they've entered the danger zone. You don't want them here. And we were doing the same thing on third down with the defense, right?
Like, yeah.
Oh no, it's the most dangerous down. You don't want to get them here.
Nick, if you can pinpoint one thing about this offense and describe how come it's been so bad, you know, with an NFL quarterback, some say the number one pick in the draft, an all timer at running back. Dudes that can get open and you know, the receivers that started off hot, tight end room with Andy's clone, Josh Caddis, doing really good stuff.
That dude had two pancakes in one play.
Yeah. And we went through it last night. The offensive line, we hear offensive line, and we broke it down by player yesterday or last night. And, you know, Kenneth Horsey is an all-SEC performer. He's out of position, but, yeah, he was an all-SEC guy. Eli Cox was a mid-year All-American playing center. Jagger Burton's a future pro, everything I hear. Tayshaun Manning had starts at Auburn. And then Jeremy Flax was the number one JUCO tackle in the country. And they've gotten worse and worse and worse. Nick, if you could just broad brush why this offense is so bad, what would you say?
The easiest thing to say is just predictability. Because – for me, if you're going to have issues on the offensive line, to scheme around it, you've got to put the other team, the defense, on its heels. And when you just first down run an inside zone, like, you're going to catch them off guard. Like, they know what's coming, right? You're not – if they're going to press you, just let your receiver try to beat them. I know they don't have a lot of experience, but – you know, let my guy go beat your guy. I think a lot of what's happened here is there's not a lot of unpredictability, a lot of spontaneity and creativity with the offense. There are certain times when, yes, you need to go to your bell cow in Chris Rodriguez. We all agree that. But if you just do it when we all expect it to happen, like, you can't – like, Eddie Grand could do this in 2019 because he had – a bunch of future pros on that. Like, he had an All-American in Darian Kennard. Landon Young was playing in that game Sunday against the Bengals, right? Like, he had some dudes up front that he could just lean on. You can't do that with this. So you got to get a little unpredictable. And I think it's been too easy to figure out what this offense is going to do, when it's going to do it.
Jay, what's your take on the offense? One thing to describe why it's been so ineffective.
I think predictability is huge, but I also think, you know, they get to the line, I think, average of probably 8 or 9 seconds left. Will never has a chance to check out of anything. We don't use any eye candy. You look at all the best offenses in our league. They right now people line 7, 8 or 8 in the box against us. We don't have any way to take anybody out of the box. We don't spread anybody out. We don't do any eye candy to get the mismatch we want. It just seems like, I don't know what they're doing in the huddle until 8 or 9 seconds left. Will's not able to check out and he doesn't have any time. And I just don't think we're scheming around the lack of the talent we have on the offensive line. I mean, they're just not playing well as a unit. So you got to find ways to be creative, to get people out of the box if you're going to run the ball, or to get the mismatches you need and pull people out of the box or what have you. It's just – to me, they're just lining up doing the same thing. And my wife literally predicts the play before almost every snap, offensive snap. I mean, she's probably 80%, which is sad. I mean, I love my wife, but she is not a football expert. But she'll call it literally almost every time what he's going to do. And it seems he's calling an NFL game and an SEC game, which you can't do that.
And that gets to be even more frustrating when you have a 15-play drive and miss a field goal, or you have a 12-play drive and kick a field goal, kick another field goal. So, yeah, I get that. Andy, what's your take?
It's obviously, and Stoops addressed it. You know, I don't know why he's taken so long to address it, but the scheme is too complex. And it doesn't look complex to us, your wife, obviously, Jay, because they can't even get into half the playbook because the kids can't pick up the first half of the playbook. Right. And that's obvious. You can see that in the speed that we play. I mean, these kids are walking to the line, and that offensive line, they got stuff running through their head. I mean, they're trying these schemes that are NFL schemes. It wasn't this weekend. I want to say it was Missouri. We had the nose blocked. Our center has him one-on-one. All of a sudden, turns him loose and goes to a double team. Comes up the middle of the field and sacks Levis. I'm like, but he was coached to do that double team and not block that man head on. I mean, he had the nose blocked, turns him loose, turns and goes to a double team. It's like that just told that play, that one single play told me that this offensive line coach, he's NFL too. You know, I'm sure he's great and he knows what he's doing, but at some point, they have to done this. They can't make this so complicated. And I said it, I think, after the Tennessee game. Watch their offense. It's not complex. It is run. Run as fast as you can, and here's your route. That is as complex as they get. And I think we're just trying to do way, way, way too much. I mean, we've all coached. I mean, the more you put in a kid's head, the less they're going to play. And I don't care how smart they are. I don't care how gifted they are. The more you make them think, the slower they play. And you can just see it, and you can see it on how we're performing. You know, Levis has got no shot. They're turning people loose. But like Jay said, he gets through the line of scrimmage. He's got no time to adjust. He barely has time to see what they're even doing to him.
Yeah, he didn't even – sometimes it seems like he doesn't even see the hot route and know that he can throw behind that hot route. I mean,
yeah. And another thing that does is it allows the defense to tee off. When you're running that late into to the play clock, you can't – I mean, how many offsides have we seen against Kentucky, the opposing defenses? I mean, you can't – you know, I made a big deal out of it because I love it that the quarterback's under center some. There's cadence instead of the clapping. And that normally leads to some offsides. I mean, the great quarterbacks do that. And Levis has not had time, Nick Roush, to draw defenses offsides, and they can just get in their stance, and they know that play clock's coming down to zero and the ball's going to be snapped. And when the defense has any advantage like that, you know, the more disadvantages you give that offensive line, that is struggle.
How many bunch sets do we run? I mean, and what are you doing when you run bunch sets? You're bringing everybody in the box.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, literally, you're bringing everybody in the box.
That's
hard to watch because, I mean, in this league, you can't have six SEC defensive players in the same area. I mean, let's face it, you ain't blocking them. I don't care. Everybody that plays in this league spreads the field except us. I mean, we have – one wide receiver and 13 personnel. If I hear the word 13 personnel one more time, I'm going to throw a rock through the television. 13 personnel drives me crazy. We have speed on the outside, put some receivers in the ball game. We got a guy with a cannon. Whatever happened to simple stuff. Fades on outside. Both receivers run fades. The first guy gets a step on his guy. Guess where I'm going? Stop it. That's all Tennessee's doing. That's all Georgia's doing. They're getting one-on-one matchups, and the quarterback seeing a guy get a step, and that's where he goes. I mean, it's not that hard. It's not. We're just complicating it. Plus, we're putting the best defenses in the country inside our box, like outnumbered. And it's just – come on, man. I mean, I don't know how much harder you got to make it on yourself.
And the other thing, too, is like I know that you don't have to be a tempo team to win – but the few times that they've put the defense on their heels, it's worked pretty well. Like,
our defenses that we play, never get gassed. They're all fresh as daisies because exactly. they get 30 seconds to catch their breath. I mean, go to the gym and work out and try to make yourself work out and change sets every 15 seconds. It's hard. We let these guys rest for 35 and 40 seconds before we snap the ball. What are you going to get? Killed. That's what you're going to get.
That's a good point, Andy.
Kentucky, I mean, it's crazy. There's this dude that crunches the numbers. Kentucky's the slowest team in America.
What? Yeah. How many yeah. offers? We only had what? Yeah.
With the least amount of talent. I mean, let's face it.
Offensive stat, snaps. Saturday,
54. Right? Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, in years past, I get one to you know, speed the game up and take as much time as you possibly can. So we got to run a game. We'll just run down your throat.
Yeah. You
know? But we don't have that anymore. We need snaps. I mean, we need snaps. We need possessions.
Yeah. I think, you know, I said this.
Jay, we would get 60 snaps in a 45-minute scrimmage in the spring.
Yeah.
I mean, think about that.
Yeah. Kentucky's 131.
No TV, but still.
At 100, at 1.88 plays per minute. Air Force, triple option team, also runs 1.88 plays per minute. So, Army is at 1.98.
It you takes know, Levis 10 seconds to call the play because it's an NFL system.
I said about a month ago that I didn't think this offense had an identity, and I think it's still true. You know, I think Chris Rodriguez, you know, and listen, when you lose to Vanderbilt, everything's fair game. I mean, it is. The whole team is fair game. But I do think Kentucky had some positives. Chris, I thought, ran really well. He almost took the team on his back and willed the Cats to win. I thought Utah McClain played well. Andy's clone, Josh Caddis, I think, continues to play really well. So there's good things out there. It's just the inconsistencies offensively that's not giving them, setting them up to the opportunity to win. And we talked about this last night. And, Nick, I'll let you touch on this. When you're looking forward, right, you look ahead of this offense, if it's not working with the top quarterback in the draft, with an all-timer at running back and everything else that we just talked about, how's it going to work when you take Levis out and Chris Rodriguez out? How's this offense looking for the future?
Yeah, and that's the scary part of this situation, right? Because a lot of what made Rich Scangarello so attractive is that he could get conceivably a talented quarterback in the transfer portal. Well, you know, is it going to be more talented than Will Levis? It's going to be hard to find somebody out there who's got the tools that Will has. That's where December is going to get crazy, right? Because the future is looking pretty bleak in November, and you got to change that before December 21st when the transfer portal opens up and whenever signing day takes place. Like that's when you got to fix your roster.
I mean, we saw what happened.
Here's two examples of Kurt. Go ahead.
So we saw what happened after we had Wandell last year. Look what we got in receivers that came in. And I mean, it's gonna be a big job to go get the right guy to come in and sling it around.
Yeah, it is, guys. Steven's got to head to Indianapolis for the game tonight. Thanks for getting on here. I know it's a frustrating day. It was a frustrating game to watch, and we're all frustrated. But we say this out of love, because every one of us love Kentucky. We all bleed blue, and we want to see these kids succeed. And we want to see – I think it's hard to watch, you know, the frustrations from the coaches and the players. For me, it's tough to watch because I do care for folks in that building. I love several people in that building, and I want to see them do good. So I think I hurt right there with them, and I know you all do too. Parting shots, Nick Rouse, how are you going to close this out?
I've enjoyed this. I appreciate hearing from Andy and Jay, especially Andy, because I know he's had some steam bubbled up, and I get to share it all the time. So I'm glad y'all finally got to let it out. So Andy, thank you. Thanks. Go off, King.
Jay and Andy, I'm gonna take you in a different direction. Let's see. I think it was Jay's senior year and Andy's junior year. we beat a top 10 ranked Georgia team. The last team that Vince Dooley, the late great Vince Dooley, brought to then Commonwealth Stadium. Now that Georgia team that we beat, what was the final score? 10-6?
16-10.
I mean, it was something crazy like that. Nick, you weren't even born yet, but this has happened. Kentucky has, you know, you're talking to three guys that beat a top 10 Georgia team. And talk about Andy and Jay, talk about how we pulled that upset off, because you guys were out there in it. My only role that game was punt return and kickoff return. So I didn't, I was a special teamer. I didn't get in there. And my only memory of the game was seeing our safety get knocked out on the sideline.
Tim Worley.
Oh my God. Nick, you've never seen an explosive hit like it almost made me throw up. But Jay and Andy, talk about how we pulled that upset and how Kentucky and working how Kentucky can do so, and we'll get out of here.
Go ahead, Andy.
Well, first of all, Tim Worley was, in Mark Sellers' defense, bigger than anybody on our defense by a foot and 20 pounds. I mean, the guy was an absolute beast. And they used to have those backs that were just awesome. But I tell you what, won that game that day, our defense played against that offense that had those backs and held them to 10 points. The offense battled all day. We ran the ball well and made some plays when we had to. But you know what? We played with our hair on fire, didn't we, Jay? We played – I mean, I was so done after that game. We all were, man. We were falling on each other, falling on the field at the end. I mean, we laid it on the line that day. And I never seen Coach Claiborne so happy as he was that day. And I tell people all the time that might have been – for Vince Dooley, that might have been the nail that sealed his fate, because he lost to Kentucky and he ended up retiring at the end of that year with that good football team he had. But we played lights out that day, and it wasn't fancy. We just played good football and took it to him.
Yeah, I just think about back in that time, and maybe the locker rooms are different just because of all the distractions and NIL and all this stuff. But we just had complete trust offensively, defensively, in each other. And we knew that we were going to be in every game no matter what. And we had complete faith that the offense was going to step up and score enough points. And defensively, we had a great game plan. I mean, we did. Coach Strzok, those guys put together a great game plan, and we all believed in each other and carried out our responsibilities and knew our guy next to us was going to do the same and toe the line. And I don't know, that belief, the energy that we brought into that and other games like that. I think about the Florida game my sophomore year. It's the same thing. And I guess I just don't see that energy and trust right now in this team, in that locker room. Obviously, I'm not in there. I don't get the chance to walk around that locker room on the sideline. But man, that was a beautiful day. And you know, we just played, as you always talk about, Freddie, complimentary football, and just trusted each other.
That was Nick. There's a picture of Jay Carey and Coach Claiborne off the field. I think it's very sweet. I'd like to find that. And one note from me on that game as the special teamer, I got so nervous, Nick, watching from a sideline. I just pounded Gatorade the whole game in water, and I had to pee so bad, and I was over there shaking, but I couldn't go to the locker room till after the game. So as soon as the final horn blew, I sprinted to the locker room. Went to the bathroom, then came back out, and all the good celebration was over with. Everybody's walking back in. So it was a bad outing by me, but I really had to pee, boys. I have to admit that. Well, guys, thanks for joining us, and thanks for y'all for listening and watching, and we hope you tune back in next week and we can talk better, because, again, everybody on this podcast loves the Cats, loves Stoops. We love everything about UK. We bled on that field. We broke bones on that field. And Andy Murray lost about two knees on that field. So we say this out of love, man. We say this out of passion. We want to see these kids enjoy, have success. And that's why we critique like we critique. So, Nick, get us out of here.
It's been good. It's been great. Thank you for this date. We'll see.